I'm Celeste Headley. It's On Second Thought. Fun fact, when you put the words pro-white into a search engine, you'll mostly get toothpaste ads. But pro-white in another context is the focus of tomorrow's show. We'll talk about a white supremacy rally that's planned for Stone Mountain, Georgia next month. And we'll hear about the disconnect between some supporters of Confederate symbols and pro-white advocates. We'd love to hear from you. Is there a difference between those who say fly the Confederate flag and white supremacists? Call us at 404-500-9457 to be part of that discussion, and then be sure to join us Wednesday at 9 a.m. for more. Georgia's decision not to expand Medicaid has left rural and some urban hospitals in a very fragile position. Five rural hospitals have already closed their doors in the past 3 years. Many more face potential financial collapse if this issue is left unresolved. And the problem has led to an unlikely statewide alliance of hospital officials, state lawmakers, and some healthcare advocates. They all hope to find a solution before it is too late. Here to tell us what kind of deadline they're under is Atlanta Magazine staff writer Max Blau, who's covered the issue. Good morning, Max.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for being with us, even though every time you come on, I say your name wrong the first time. Also with us is Chris Clark. He's CEO and president of the Georgia Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to the program, Chris.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. And Maggie Gill is the CEO and president of Memorial Health. She joins us from our studios in Savannah. Hi, Maggie.
Good morning. Hello.
Max, we have talked about this issue from time to time for a long time because we've seen it coming. So before, every time we've talked about this before, we've addressed it as sort of a coming storm. Has that storm arrived?
Yes and no. Yes, in the sense, as you mentioned in your opening remarks, that hospitals have been closing. There were five that shut down in 2013. 2014, about two-thirds were losing money. What is happening now is for a while there was a delay, this fiscal cliff, if you will, in healthcare that it was delayed several years at the federal level. And what at the end of 2017, what happens at that point is hospitals in Georgia, both large ones in urban areas and small ones in rural areas, will lose a significant amount of funding that goes to treating the uninsured. And that deadline is, as of now, is not going anywhere. That is a hard deadline, and with that comes a need to take action to save a lot of our hospitals.
So, Maggie, let me play you this comment from Cindy Zeldin, who is executive director of Georgians for a Healthy Future and heads the Cover Georgia Coalition, which is the main lobbying group for Medicaid expansion in Georgia.
There are about 300,000 Georgians right now who fall into this gap and who have no way to get health coverage. And that really is problematic for these individual consumers, patients, and for their families. They're not able to get a continuous spectrum of preventive and treatment services that they need for themselves and their families to stay healthy and to feel some financial security.
She's talking about the effect on individuals and their families. What is the effect of that coverage gap on hospitals?
So hospitals have a responsibility to treat all patients regardless of their ability to pay. And a hospital like Memorial, that's a safety net hospital that provides a wide spectrum of services, that serves a very large catchment area. For us, it's 150 miles. It means that whether somebody is coming to our emergency department because they have a cold or because they have a traumatic injury, we have a responsibility to care for them, and rightly so. But it also means that there's a significant amount of the care that we provide that is either unfunded or significantly underfunded. And if I could just make one comment, too, about those federal cuts in reimbursement, actually some of those reductions from the Affordable Care Act have already taken place. And so Memorial, for example, has already lost some of the supplemental funding from the federal government to care for those uninsured and underinsured patients. And so we have essentially, there's been no dent in the number of people who we care for who don't have access to basic health insurance.
Chris, this brings me to you because this alliance of hospitals, lawmakers, and some healthcare advocates, they're all grouping together to try to make this a common cause. Is that alliance enough to save some of these rural hospitals, especially that are in danger?
No, I think what you also have to have, Celeste, is the business community engaged in those local chambers of commerce, those local leaders that really are on the ground seeing the impact of these cuts every day have to be part of this discussion, too. That's why we formed this task force a few months ago that have hospitals, doctors, insurers, big businesses, you know, associations from around the state that are in business, our local chambers, to work on this issue together. You know, when we look at the issue from the business perspective, yes, we very much care about that lack of access, but we also have to realize the economic impact of what's happening out there. I mean, you've got $44 billion is the economic impact directly from hospitals in Georgia. They employ 100,000 folks, but 40% of those rural hospitals lost money last year. And in many of our communities, our hospitals aren't just a top economic engine. They are the only economic engine. And so if you don't have, if one of those hospitals closes, there's nothing we can do to recruit companies to that community, much less keep the ones that are there. And so, yes, we are looking at the personal side of this and what it means to Georgia families, but we're talking about saving communities as well. It's a much bigger, and that's why we've gotten engaged like we have here for the last year or so.
Maggie, Chris just said that 40% of rural hospitals last year lost money. How many years can a hospital sustain a deficit before it can't anymore?
Well, it depends on whether that deficit eats into any, you know, cash reserves they might have, or whether there's any local government support for those hospitals. But, you know, getting by is not what you would call a healthy network of healthcare providers. And you know, what Chris said is exactly right, that in order to recruit business, retain business, grow business in any community, having a sound healthcare system is essential. And one of the fundamental building blocks of any community. And so, you know, we'd like to see more than just survival. We'd like to see a robust, healthy infrastructure of healthcare for our state.
Max, we reached out to Senator Chuck Hufstetler. He was one of the first Republicans to actually support adopting the Medicaid expansion here in Georgia. He says he didn't support the Affordable Care Act to begin with, but he supports the expansion. Take a listen.
In our state, we don't agree with a lot that the federal government does on education, but we still get our share of the funds. We may not agree with transportation, but we still try to get our share of those funds and food stamps and many other areas. And so some of the states were making a decision not to accept this money. And I felt like rather than sending all our money to other states, that we would be better off, even though we didn't agree with the law, to take our share of the money and put it to good use here and cover these working poor.
Why is this money for the Medicaid expansion different from all the other federal dollars he's mentioned?
This, what happened when the Affordable Care Act was expanded, it was intended to cover this group of people that does not have insurance.
That falls into that gap.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And when in 2012, the Supreme Court struck down a key provision of the Affordable Care Act that would have made it mandatory for all states to expand Medicaid. States had the choice to do that. What you saw in the growing opposition over the past 5 or so years towards President Obama's health care plan is Republican governors in many of those states in the South choosing to not expand. And as a result, there's this unintended gap in coverage that was created where the funding that was going to go away, that is going away with DSH payments now. Disproportionate share of hospital payments. They're the payments that I referenced earlier
that reimburse for uninsured, so significantly.
Right. With those going away, there's been nothing to replace that, so to say.
Chris, I'm going to play you this comment from Cindy Zeldin of the Georgians for a Healthy Future. She says if Georgia had actually expanded Medicaid back in 2014, it wouldn't have cost the state anything for 3 years.
It was paid for 100% through federal dollars. Starting in 2017, that percentage is slowly declining, and then it's going to stop when it hits 90% in the year 2020, and then it will remain 10% state share and 90% federal share. So that's a pretty good deal for states.
Is it possible, Chris, that we may still be able to get the Medicaid expansion passed here in Georgia?
I think it's highly unlikely that you'll have a traditional Medicaid expansion model. And she's right. I mean, you know, those first 3 years wouldn't have cost Georgia anything, quote unquote. But over the next 10 years, it would have cost us $3 billion. Now, the opposite side of that, we would be able to pull down, as Representative Hutzeler said, $40 billion of tax money that's now going to other states that should be coming back to Georgia. But what the Georgia General Assembly has said and the governor has said, and we've taken as the core, one of the core, four core things that we're working on in our task force, is what we need is a Georgia solution that's affordable and sustainable over the long term, that provides access, that provides our particularly strengthens our safety net hospitals like Grady and Memorial, but that gives us flexibility. And so that's what we're working on. What are those Georgia solution options that we can use some of these federal waivers? There are several states out there that have used different waivers from the traditional Medicaid expansion. And there's a new waiver that comes online in 2017 that seems to be a more bipartisan approach. And so that's one of the options that we're looking at now. So I don't know that you'll get a traditional Medicare expansion in Georgia, but you can find a Georgia solution, and that's what we're focused on.
If you're just joining us, you heard Chris Clark, the CEO and president of the Georgia Chamber of Commerce. I'm also joined by Max Blau, a staff writer at Atlanta Magazine, and Maggie Gill is CEO and president of Memorial Health in Savannah. Maggie, for those of us who don't deal with all these bills and policies and dollar amounts, what are the real effects when it comes down to someone who is living in rural Georgia right now, perhaps? Is it possible that it could be an ambulance ride of a couple hours at some point if some of these rural hospitals close down?
I think what we see is that people delay getting care. And so by the time that they reach a hospital like Memorial, which may be, as you say, a two-hour ambulance ride away, that they're sicker. And they have more health problems to manage. And so we've actually seen that pressure on our health system as the pressure on the rurals begins to grow. And so the number of patients, the acuity of those patients, the resources those patients need from the rural area has continued to get higher and more as financial pressures in those markets grows. You know, also, I think that the, Georgia's 41st in the country for primary care physicians per capita, you know, having primary care physicians in these rural communities is very important and would go a long way into helping build a health system in the rural community so that that doesn't happen, so that patients have access to basic care and they use a hospital like Memorial for the tertiary needs that we provide, but that it's not a result of a delay in treatment.
Max, is there a sort of a domino effect? We've talked also on the show on the difficulty in getting in doctors and nurses to go serve in rural areas. So does this Medicaid expansion then kind of have a domino effect all through the healthcare system?
I think so, yeah. It's the kind of thing where, as Maggie was saying too, you know, it's I think a clearer way, an example of that is if you are getting primary care, say, for a heart condition that you have, and you're going in every single month or every week or whatever your doctor is asking you to do, the odds of you maintaining that is going to cost less, and it's going to probably lead to you getting more routine care rather than waiting for a emergency where there's a need to go to an ER, which is not only bad for you, but it's bad for the hospital in the sense that it's going to cost more at the end of the day to provide treatment in the ER. So, yeah, I think there is a domino effect, as you just mentioned.
And, Maggie, is that cost when the hospital gets stuck with a deficit, is that eventually picked up by taxpayers?
No, not at all. The supplemental funding that's been referenced a couple times is actually only a very small portion of the cost of caring for people who are uninsured or underinsured, and tax support is only local. So, for example, in Savannah, Memorial receives zero tax support. And so those costs are really borne on the entire system for all the insured patients and other who have to bear the cost of trying to make the equation balance. You know, like the state of Georgia, we're in charge of balancing a budget at Memorial, and we have to do that with one-third of the people that we treat having no ability to pay or paying below cost. And so costs get shifted. And that's how, unfortunately, our healthcare system works, and I think that's what we're trying to band together to address.
We've got about a minute left, Chris. Some other states, notably Arkansas, have come up with models that are is called the private option. What is our option here in Georgia? What might our solution look like?
Well, that's what we're working on now. And we have a three-part study. The first part is look at what's the economic impact, what's the data, who is uninsured and underinsured. Is it 18% of Georgians? Is it 22% of Georgians? So we're working on that. The second is to look at those other states, see what those options are. Some states like Arkansas have come out with options. They've pulled them back in because they haven't worked. Others like Utah have a new system that seems to work well. And then the third phase, which we hope to release sometime in July or early August, are actually what are the options that meet the requirements of the Georgia General Assembly, the governor, and that would work for here in Georgia. So that's all part of what we're working on now.
And Max, is the deadline 2017?
It's the end of 2017, which means we'll have one legislative session next year to presumably get this right, or something not so great is going to happen.
Max Blau is staff writer for Atlanta Magazine. Chris Clark is the CEO and president of the Georgia Chamber of Commerce. Maggie Gill is the CEO and president of Memorial Health in Savannah. Thanks to all three of you.
Thank you so much.